How about the Frighteners next?
That's fine.
Okay.
I figured it makes sense.
Yes, it would. What's up? This is Movies on Up. He always wanted to be special, but he never expected this. You should expect my special co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella.
I'm always special.
Always special, always seated directly across from me. That is Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. He's always wanted to be special, but never expected this is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guests to us in one of the three following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guests to us via the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, you can expect a very special prize package coming your way to you. From us.
Yay.
Yay. To you from us, a very special month, October. It's kind of Halloween month. We did a vampire week last week. This week, we are now about elbow deep into Peter Jackson. We did Dead Alive earlier on this week. So if for whatever reason you missed that one, or if you're listening out of sequence, we're going to probably refer to some of the stuff we talked about in the last episode as well. So maybe listen to that one first. Good. Now that you've done that, we can go ahead and continue with our Frighteners episode. This was a movie that I think occurred to us kind of late in the process, which is weird because I think it's a movie that we both like an awful lot.
Yeah, it's one of those that I have a fond memory of going to see it in the theater, but it's one of those that anytime it's on, I'll turn it on. But I just recently rewatched it from front to back because I don't think I'd seen it all the way from front to back since I saw it opening weekend in the theater. But I had seen it so many times, if that makes any sense. And it's fun, but I love Michael J. Fox as a movie star. I truly do. I love his filmography, and it's an awesome movie. It still is. It's one of those that I have this memory of, oh, it's an awesome movie. And then you rewatch it, and it's like, oh, yeah, I'm right. Obviously, I have awesome taste.
I certainly did not see this in the theater. I came to it much later. I was either in high school or college. And I think kind of what made me go back and watch it is that I had run across Dead Alive and some of the really early Peter Jackson stuff. And I was like, he did this movie right before the Lord of the Rings movies, which I had seen. So I was like, I like Dead Alive. Let me check out this Frighteners movie. I've really kind of been in love with it ever since. The movie did come out 3 years after Dead Alive in 1996, starring the aforementioned Michael J. Fox, Trini Alvarado, and Jeffrey Combs. With Dave's help, the movie did manage to open in fifth place on July 19th, 1996, with $5.5 million. It was the best of the new releases.
I saw two movies this day, the day I saw this.
Okay. Well, let's see if one of these other ones that we'll mention.
And then I'll make you guess which one it was.
Okay, fair enough. He bested Stephen Baldwin in Fled, Michael Keaton in Duplicity, and Shaq in Kazam. So Michael J. Fox greater than Shaq. The rest of your top five that week, Independence Day at number one with $21 million, followed by Phenomenon, Courage Under Fire, The Nutty Professor with The Frighteners rounding out your top five. So was it a movie that was in its first week?
It was opening week and not in the top five.
Okay, was it Multiplicity?
No.
Kazam?
No.
Did you see Fled?
I did.
Holy, yeah.
This was the first summer I had my driver's license. This would have been like the first or second weekend since,
making bad decisions on your own.
This would have been like the first or second weekend since school was out. And it was like the first summer I remember my brother like not coming home because he was essentially moved in with his soon-to-be wife. So I was like on my own, and my brother and I would always go see double movies. We'd always go to the movie theater and see two. And I went, and it was like a big deal for me. It was the first time I went on my own by myself to two movies, and I saw The Frighteners and Fled.
Got stuck in the F's, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I just finished school, so that's where my mind was.
The movie did go on to gross $16 million domestically, which puts it in 3,510th place on the all-time domestic list, just two spots behind this 2004 Gael Garcia Bernal entry.
Oh, that motorcycle one?
Yes.
Motorcycle Diaries?
The Motorcycle Diaries, yeah. Indeed. And one spot ahead of the Ryan Phillippe, Selma Hayek, Neve Campbell disco movie that sounds a lot better than it actually was.
54,
indeed.
I wanted that movie. How do you have a movie with so much shirtless Ryan Phillippe and make it so hard to watch?
Add in Mike Myers.
That's actually probably true.
Also from 96, just a couple spots below that, Trainspotting at 35-33. A couple spots below that, the 1983 classic Krull, which is only a classic, I think, to maybe me and Dave. And at 35-23, you've got one of Dave's faves, 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And the original Tremors from 1990 is 35-16.
Which I legit love.
Tremors?
The first Tremors.
It's solid.
I want them to stop making the stupid sequels and just give us a legit Tremors reboot.
And then do sequels based off of that?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a solid horror movie.
I think it is. I do enjoy Tremors. All those movies made right around $16 million. So that's what $16 million buys you at the box office. Some graboids, some vampires, and a spinning disc of death. Last episode, we spent an awful lot of time talking about Dead Alive and how it fits in with the early stuff from Peter Jackson. The Frighteners, I think, represents a bit of a sea change, not just in content, but in his status as a director. Heavenly Creatures was the movie he made right before that, which couldn't have been any more opposite of what he was doing at the time. It was distributed.
Hey, we're making this really deep girl about these young adolescent women. Hey, did you see Dead Alive? How about that guy?
Exactly. I'm sure that's about how the conversation went. But the movie turned out...
Oh, it was fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic.
Right. It was distributed by Miramax, and The Frighteners was a Universal movie. So he went from the guy that was making independent horror movies in New Zealand to now a guy that's fully engrossed in the studio system.
Oh, yeah. I think Heavenly Creatures had a New Zealand feel to it. But so Frighteners was almost his Here's America. Like, I feel like that was his first, like, American studio film. Because you had America's Sweetheart in it. First of all, Michael J. Fox.
Oh, I thought you were going Jeffrey Combs.
And Jeffrey Combs.
Jake Busey.
Chai McBride. Like, it worked. Whereas Heavenly Creatures was such a departure from Dead Alive. This was a departure from Heavenly Creatures. And then Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, he kind of did shift some gears. The content obviously did shift a little bit. You had Dead Alive and Meet the Feebles and Bad Taste that, had they been released, well, they never would have been. But in a world where somebody falls asleep at the switch and decides to release these wide, I think that those movies would probably alienate large portions of the general movie-going audience. But then with Heavenly Creatures, with even The Frighteners, I think that these movies were a bit more commercially marketable. And specifically, The Frighteners was kind of a great way for Jackson, I think, to begin life as a studio director. He was able to make a horror movie, which he had been doing since the 80s, but one that you could actually sell to people. And I think that Heavenly Creatures demonstrated that he could make a straightforward movie without having to weird out everybody in the room.
And this is a straightforward movie where he still gets a chance to weird out people.
It's like the best of both worlds, I guess. And like Dave mentioned, it was also the last movie he'd make before heading off to Middle Earth. At the time, after The Frighteners had finished, his next project was going to be King Kong, which was to be another Universal movie, which got canceled in 1997. So he decided, well, I'll just move to this other pet project that I've had in mind, and that was Lord of the Rings. And it kind of illustrates how much confidence studios had in him that he could decide, I want to make Lord of the Rings. And studios would be like, I think Miramax, for the start, was like, yeah, all right, you can make two movies. And then when they heard the budget, they were like, no, there's no way in hell we can finance that. New Line stepped in and said, well, there's three books, so why don't you just make three movies? And the rest, as they say, is history. But that's a hell of a bet on the guy that directed Dead Alive in 1993.
And, I mean, even following that up, The Frighteners, what did we say, 19, 23 million?
16 million.
Yeah. I think the first Lord of the Rings budget was 10 Frighteners.
I think it was about 150 at least.
Yeah, so where that comes from, like, that says a lot about Jackson and what he was able to show and how he is from the non-camera angle. Because, no, I don't care how good of a director you are, you have to be able to talk to get that kind of deal with Lord of the Rings. Spielberg can show up and say, hey, I want to move to New Zealand for 4 years, make three movies. Okay. Peter Jackson doesn't have that clout. There has to be something else there that he is really good at to make a studio say, yeah, let's do hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. And
because if you flub the first one,
yep.
Ball's already rolling on the next
exactly.
two.
They were already greenlit. It was like the Matrix trilogy where they had followed up two and three.
The last two, yeah.
Right, yeah. After the success of the first one, they just cranked out the last two thinking, oh, we got this. This is going to be fine. That certainly could have happened with Fellowship, and then they'd had two more that just kind of wrecked in the same way. And I think it's kind of interesting to compare and contrast this with Dead Alive. You take out Heavenly Creatures, and they were both made within 3 years of each other, both by the same director, but the approach was very, very different. What was done pretty much exclusively in the camera for Dead Alive, the effects for Frighteners were moved pretty much to digital. The difference of a movie, you know, coming out in 1993 and being made before that and coming out after, it's all a post-Jurassic Park world at that point. And I think Jackson was one of the biggest proponents of that technology. It's what made him think he could make Lord of the Rings in the first place. The effects don't necessarily hold up all that well today, especially with the high def.
See, I disagree. I think the carpet and stuff, I think that stuff, the stuff in the house,
yeah,
I still think looks awesome for being 20 years old.
I do agree on certain points of that. Some of the...
The baby's flying needed some work.
Right.
But
the opening sequence with the ghosts in the walls, that... to me was very reminiscent of Nightmare and Freddy kind of coming out of the wall. This stuff, a digital Freddy at that point, but I did like that. Some of the things that I don't think necessarily hold up as well, I just think specifically towards the end of the movie when Combs gets
face.
When he gets shot and is
Oh yeah. That's bad.
That's
funny.
Sure.
That was funny. A Dead Alive moment, I think.
Like, yeah. And I think at the time, and you would know because you were there in 96 watching it, it's easy to look back, even on Jurassic Park, the effects on those are still, a lot of them are still beautiful, but they're not as beautiful now.
As they were then.
Right, yeah. If a kid who's 10 years old now watches Jurassic Park, they might think it looks a little hokey, whereas you and I remember being completely enamored in the theaters, and it just shows like, oh, I can do this with computers, so I can have crazy shit. And for a guy like Peter Jackson, who just did a bunch of crazy shit practically, he's thinking...
He's going nuts.
Yeah, I can do whatever the hell I want. And he did.
And I mean, it's to give him some credit, we're both practical effects fans. But it's easier to do zombie kills with practical effects because digital is lame. It's hard to do practical ghosts.
Yeah.
So I 100% get why so much of this movie is digital. And I, like I said, I think it looks good. I think that the stuff in the house, yeah, there are moments, the head getting blown off and Busey's face at the grave. Those were a little, yeah, but overall, the Reaper and the Chai McBride and the other, like those were whatever. Those were good enough. No worse than what we have now. But the house stuff with the carpet stuff, I think looks fantastic even today.
That first scene was pretty rad. The only thing that bothers me, and it's just again, it's from just an aesthetic standpoint, is when the carpet grabs her wrists, that looks really bad. It all looks kind of flat. But I mean, that's just one thing, and I'm nitpicking at that point. My one real criticism, which I don't feel like is nitpicking, is that the movie tonally seems a bit uneven. At times, it plays like a dark comedy. At times, it's a straight-up horror movie. And at times, it seems like young Pete Jackson shows up to add some of his young Pete Jackson humor that is a little out of place in this. Look no further than the mummy sex scene for that.
Yeah, and here's where I get it 100% that it is uneven, but I feel like it's by design. Like, if you look at a movie like The Signal, where it's essentially three shorts all put together, like that movie tonally shifts, but you have three different stories. I feel like this, it is uneven throughout, but it's even in spots. So it's almost like it starts off as this comedy, then it gets to a darker comedy, then it turns into like a thriller whodunit. I feel like in those segments, it's even. Because once it takes a turn, you know, there's no cowboy humping a mummy. Like once it takes that dark turn, the jokes kind of go away. it is uneven overall, but I feel like in its spot, I feel like everything had its spot, and in those three segments, it almost feels like three movies. And I thought that when I saw it at the theater. I remember saying that because my brother asked me. He was like, oh, it felt like three movies, because it does. And I feel like that's not a mistake. I feel like that had to have been by design.
And maybe one of the reasons that it felt like three movies is that there was probably enough plot in there for three movies.
Well, there was three books that they put down into one. That's why he said never again.
No, next time I'm going to take one book and make it into three movies. That's kind of the story that, with the benefit of hindsight, we get with Peter Jackson. Nothing gets cut out. You've got, in this movie, the heart attack.
Oh, if you're a Red Herring fan, man, is this movie for you.
Oh, God. It's like a Lent. There's all the fish you can eat. You've got your heart attacks and serial killer storyline. You've got the storyline with Bannister's Reaper. Ghost friends. You've
the
got
wife. Did he kill his wife?
Right. The FBI agent showing up. I don't like to complain about things unless I feel like I might have an answer, and it might not be the right answer, but at least it's a possible solution. This movie clocks in, I think, at about 2 hours and 15 minutes, which is kind of long for a movie like this. I think it's easily about a 90-minute movie if you simply cut Dammers out. Him casting suspicion on Frank, did he kill his wife? He does all that in exposition, but I think you could just move that to the local cops, and you can completely cut out his character, and you don't miss anything.
No, he's in there and it's weird. It's almost like, hey, Combs is a cool actor. How can we make him weird? We can't get Crispin Glover, so let's let him do this.
To be honest, I didn't love his story, but I did like Jeffrey Combs. And I can guarantee you, Peter Jackson said, all right, I've got money to make a horror movie. You know what? I love Reanimator. I'm putting Herbert West in this movie. Oh, well, I don't really have a role for him. I'm going to make one. And that's what it seemed like here. I love Jeffrey Combs, much like I'm sure Peter Jackson does. I think he may have over-creeped that character. I think it's pretty obvious from the first time you meet him that he's crazy.
And the scene when he takes his shirt off, like, it doesn't... His storyline makes no sense to me. It's weird, and it feels shoehorned in there.
When he does have his full-on crazy reveal, I feel like that's the least surprising thing ever.
Yeah,
of course
it's built
he's
up
nuts.
To it. Yeah, and it feels so long because by the time you get to the climax, you're working like a whole 90-minute mystery whodunit that up until that point hasn't been a mystery whodunit. So now you're cramming a 90-minute movie of twists and turns into a 35-minute climax.
And trying to wrap up other storylines as well.
And you still have the other two movies that we just watched that you have to wrap up in the process.
And we talked about last episode how obviously Jackson is a fan of horror movies and casting.
Not a fan of pacing.
Nah, not so much. And casting Jeffrey Combs does kind of hint to that, where he's a fan like the rest of us. And having Dee Wallace in there too, she's kind of maybe not on the Jeffrey Combs level, but she's got a ton of horror credits to her name too. And her role fit a little bit better. But I like the fact that he's taking sort of these culty figures and putting them in his horror movie because he has that much appreciation for the genre.
Yeah, and I love that from directors. You saw James Gunn do it in Slither, mm-hmm. and Edgar Wright there's a Peter Jackson cameo in Hot Fuzz. Like, there's stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he
like
makes
that.
Jackson makes a lot of cameos in his own movies. He was in this one, I think he was the biker that Frank bumps into in Dead Alive. He was in the mortuary. He was the assistant that messed everything up. He's a pretty noticeable guy, a bit like when Hitchcock makes his cameos or Stan Lee. Like, you can pick him out pretty easily.
I love Chad McBride in this movie, though.
Yeah.
I feel like he's so understated and underused, but I absolutely love him in this movie.
And I think that's when I mentioned the, you know, his ghost buddies. I would love to have seen a full movie
of the first half hour.
Right, of Frank being some kind of ghostbuster, but a scam.
I love that. And that sucks you in, and it's like, that's the movie I thought I was getting.
Yes.
It's like, oh, he has these ghost friends. He has them haunt a house. He takes money. It's fine. I love that concept.
Mm-hmm.
But it moves on pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does. And we do get a resolution, kind of, to those characters. They get dealt with, kind of, hey, you like Chad McBride. Now there's just no Chad McBride in this movie for a while.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, he's doing something cool. Oh, he's gone. He's, oh, there he is.
He's re-dead, I guess. We both obviously like Michael J. Fox, and I really thought he was a very interesting choice for the lead in this. He's always a guy that's going to be likable, and he's always going to get the benefit of the doubt as the good guy. But Frank Bannister's not really a good guy.
But you relate to him because he just lost his wife 5 years ago. He's living in the house that he was building for that they didn't finish, and he never finished it. He's not a good guy, but you can see it. You can see where that darkness comes from. And he's the kind of guy where if it's your neighbor, you get the nerve to say, like, hey, you want to go grab a beer sometime? But I love Michael J. Fox as a movie star. Like, I truly, legit do. I know you love Teen Wolf, but, like, I love Greedy, Doc Hollywood. You know, he was in those ones with
Back
the
to
car.
The Future.
Yeah, those ones. Secret to My Success. Like, I legit love all of those movies. And of Michael J. Fox movies, I think this might be my favorite because I love it so much. And we are pretty critical of it. Like, we're talking pretty negatively of it because it does have its flaws.
Right.
But
Michael J. Fox is not one of them.
No, oh, no. I don't think anybody in the cast, maybe. I mean, Combs, not for him, but for the whole character.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a well-made movie. It is. But it could lose a half hour.
Yeah, certainly. And maybe some tweaks here. And maybe just refocus on what's really good about the story. And that was Michael J. Fox and Ghost Buddies. And I guess when I think about this movie, if it's been a while since I've seen it, and it certainly had been, when somebody asks me what the movie's about, I always kind of go back to Michael J. Fox is this con man, and he can see ghosts, and he sort of teams up with them to infest a house. Then he comes in and plays the Ghostbuster as this, like, this family type. You could watch it with your family ghost story.
Grim Reaper story that's killing people and carving the numbers into their forehead.
That's the part that I always forget about.
Then there's this hospital killing that happened forever ago, and the victim and.
And then there's this FBI guy that shows up who always likes to rip his shirt off, which I don't know how he ripped off that lead vest as well, but that's a completely different discussion. In my head, it's like a maybe a little bit more spookier version of Ghostbusters, but certainly, hey, it's funny, it's light. And then I sat down to watch it again this time, and it shows that it's, you know, got the R rating, and I'm thinking, really? I mean, is this a different version of the movie? Did I get, like, the extra nasty cut or something?
The extra thrusts on the mummy?
Yeah, and then I see that, and I'm like, I guess I could see where you're coming from.
Like, the subtlety in that scene. It's funny because, oh, this cowboy goes into the tomb of the mummy. It's subtle. It's funny. We get the joke. But then you just cut to just straight up humping.
Yeah, and then
it goes back to the zombies humping at the dinner table.
It does.
Peter Jackson is a horny dude.
There's maybe a necrophilia fetish going on with him. I don't know.
He likes dead people porking.
Not saying. I'm just saying. I do feel like the movie, if he wanted to, could have been made PG-13 relatively easily. Cut out the extra thrusts there. Maybe don't have Chai McBride swear quite as much. Sometimes I feel like he was just taking dialogue cues from us.
I feel like Chai McBride didn't have lines on the script. I just feel like Chai McBride just ad-libbed everything.
Your character says something.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Chai McBride, line.
I don't think that there was very much that they would have had to cut out to be that family movie that I have in my head.
You could trim a half an hour and get down to PG-13, and you have the same movie but more compact. Once you hit that third act, it's a whole new movie.
Yes.
And it feels like a movie. Like, it's the length of a movie almost. Like, it's just that last act is just, like, on and on and on. And it's like, okay. It's like a trilogy all wrapped into one. And the third one's usually the worst. It's not bad, though. That's the thing, is the last act, compared to the other two, it's just different.
Right.
But you're kind of burnt out at that point. Like, and there's,
you've already sat through two movies that you like.
Yeah, and it gets so close to an end, and then there's another turn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, okay. I mean, I still love it. Like, I don't think we've ever spoken so critically of a movie that we both like. So clearly enjoy.
I feel like you speak that negatively about Chronicle, too.
Yeah, I love that movie. It's a great supervillain origin story.
Indeed. And it gave us Michael B. Jordan. In addition to liking The Frighteners, I think we both do like Jackson as a horror director. And Last episode, we said, oh, God, we'd love to see Peter Jackson come back and do horror. And it got me to thinking, Peter Jackson is going to hear this, and he might say, you know what, fellas? Because I think that's what New Zealanders sound like. You know what, fellas? I would like to come back and do a horror movie, but I'm just fresh out of ideas. So, again, I don't like to complain about stuff if we can't offer a solution. So, what do you think you'd like to see the guy that made The Frighteners and Dead Alive? What kind of horror movie could we hope to see from Peter Jackson now that he's come down from Middle Earth?
I'd like to see... He's proven a competent like drama director with Lovely Bones and even King Kong to an extent and Heavenly Creatures. I would like to see, I'll compare it to 28 Days Later. I want to see him make a horror movie, but not the goofy horror movie that Dead Alive was, like a serious, almost dramatic horror movie.
Because, which there are signs of in this.
Yeah, there are. But there's also the first
right.
half that's comedy.
Yeah.
Like
the
I want to see him make a like a darker dramatic horror movie because he will sprinkle his sense of humor in there still. And I know he will because I know he can't. I've seen his work. I know his sense of humor is going to come through. And I just feel like if he takes it a darker tone, I think it'd be awesome because visually he can do great stuff. I mean, King Kong wasn't that great of a movie. Fantastic visually. The Lord of the Rings movies, the first trilogy I thought looked fantastic. I thought some of the stuff in The Hobbit didn't look as great, but he has an eye, and I'd like to see maybe even a monster movie. Like Del Toro did, what, Relic? Mm-hmm. I'd like to see something like that, to where it's not a campy horror movie, but it's a legit dramatic horror where there's stuff going on. And give me a cool monster.
Yeah.
Like the thing at the end. Like that's so... Jackson with Karen Busey and Dee Stone, mm-hmm. where it's just like that segment is just like, Peter, go nuts. Do what you want.
Express it later yeah. in hell. I think to kind of piggyback on your point, I would like to see him do a monster movie. And I know that he's very interested in King Kong. He made King Kong. Universal is relaunching their Monsters brand, and I think he would be a phenomenal director to do any of them. I mean, I'd love to see a Peter Jackson
like
Wolfman.
Wolfman movie. Because the Mummy and the Mummy one that they're doing with mm-hmm. Tom Cruise and Legs from Kingsman, that sounds like what I'm talking about, where it's a horror movie, but it's set in this darker tone. Him doing something like The Creature, I think would be really, really cool. Him doing a Monster Squad remake would be awesome.
That would be fine, too. I'd be okay if Shane Black wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So I'll leave that for him and give me, like, a Frankenstein from Peter Jackson. But I think that he does have, you know, that affinity for those old-timey. Maybe I'm just reading into it with the Universal connection, but that's what I would love to see him do. Truthfully, I'd love to see him do anything. I'm not really pumped about the Tintin thing. That just wasn't for me.
Well, the thing is that's such an odd... I'm so conflicted there, because I don't have this relation to the Tintin character.
Right.
That Tintin movie was good. There were so many people in it that I liked that I had to watch it. It's a legit movie. Like, it's good. But I don't need more, and I feel like I forgot about it. I forgot about the Tintin movie until I saw that he's announced to do the next one.
Yeah, he has some kind of secret project rolling around, which could be something that does super excite us. I don't know. I would love to see him kind of get back to that horror roots. I think he's kind of tried. I mean, there were some elements in Lord of the Rings that certainly had the horror aspect to him. Even in Kong, there was that as well.
Well, the whole Skull Island stuff was like a horror movie.
Right, yeah. So that would be great to see him get back to that. It'd be great if you guys would stick around and come back next week when we are going to go from one iconic horror director in Peter Jackson to another in James Wan. We're going to do Saw, which I think is the original, the only of the franchise that Dave has seen.
Yeah.
So we're really making him get out of his comfort zone.
That also comes from a Ryan Burke suggestion.
This is what happens.
Other people think for us? Awesome.
Yeah, you basically get to run the show, because at this point, 4 years in, we're completely out of ideas.
As we asked Ryan on Twitter, hey, what movies do you think we should do for October? He listed like five. We're doing two of them.
Yeah, and I think of those five, two that we for certain did, and then there were a couple more that I think we were planning on doing anyway. So we basically will just do whatever movies you want, as long as it's not Love Actually. We will never do Love never Actually. So don't even bother requesting it. But we are going to do Saw next week, and we're going to wrap up the very merry month of October with our Halloween special, which is sort of like the Zombaby from Dead Alive. It's gestating, about to plop, and it'll probably be just as vicious. You've got that to look forward to next week. So until
then.
At
this point, we have no idea what it's going to be.
Well, we have a small idea.
We have a fraction of an idea.
Which is better than we usually have.
Keep it up!